Mrs. Manrique on sign language.
Hi, good afternoon. So in today's presentation, I will talk about mutual understanding in sign conversation, focusing on question response sequences in Argentinian Sign Language, known also as LSA, British Sign Language, known also as BSL. So today I'll present part of a bigger project where I'm trying to investigate where are the visual gestural practices that signers and speakers use to maintain and achieve mutual understanding in everyday conversation. Can I use this as well? So today I'll focus on one modality only of language, comparing two sign languages that are not related either from a linguistic or cultural point of view. It's okay, I can just stay here. So to study Argentinian Sign Language, I use a large conversational corpus of everyday interaction where signers meet to share different activities, where they have a dinner together, a drink, play games, swimming pool, different activities. The goal of this collection was to try to get as natural data as possible. So this is a 100 hours of high definition video recording, and where 98 deaf native signers participated. The other sign language that I'm focusing on today also is BSL, which also in around the same years was collected, 125 hours of videos, in which 249 deaf signers participated in 8 regions across the UK. As you can see, both corpora are a bit different. So this is not only a conversation, but also storytelling, interviews, sign elicitation. I didn't collect this data, but it's a more pre-arranged settings of the added conversations. So it look a bit different, but it's still spontaneous conversation. So for this project, I'm looking at very detailed data analysis, qualitative information about sign languages, but also quantitative information, collecting 350 cases in each language. So this is still a project that is in process. So I'm halfway of the collection of cases and coding. And also from a multimodal approach, where in sign language, signers have two signs articulators compared to one tone in spoken language. Also facial actions to mark, phonological information, prosodic information, head movements, upper body movement also, because it's a tridimensional language that uses space to communicate. Mouthing gestures, finger spellings, and speech. So for this particular project on question responses, I'm using the coding scheme that was designed by the Max Planck Institute on 2010, comparing 10 spoken languages. So I'm basing my coding scheme on this previous coding scheme and adding more adjusting to sign languages and other more information. So one way to investigate mutual understanding is to look at what happens when it fails. And another way is to look at successful practices of understanding. So my proposal for this project is to look at both problems of understanding and less successful and more successful understanding practices. So to look at this, one of the practices that I'm focusing on is on questions. And I'm looking at how the different type question and the different type of responses and response uptakes that are given as evidence of the different levels of understanding. So what things can happen after a signer asks a question, probably also a speaker. So can provide a fitted response. So that is what is expected. Could also provide a delayed response in cases of word searches, for instance, where the questioner has to then secure the attention first and then repeat the action again. Another thing that can happen is a lack of attention. So in the case of sign languages, it's critical because if there is no eye contact, there's no interaction. So these are cases where, for instance, someone is asking a question and the other person just wasn't looking at the person. So they are not accountable for the next action. Another possibility is to, when the addressee has problems understanding or difficulties perceiving the question, in this case, seeing a question, is initiating repair that will be later resolved by the questionnaire. During previous years, I've been focusing on repair practices in Argentinian Sign Language only, looking at all the different types of initiation of repairs, solutions, trouble sources, and really looking if they are similar, to what extent they are similar to what has been described for spoken languages. So this has been a very challenging project because this practice haven't been described before for any sign language. Mm-hmm. One of the practices that I was interested in during this work is what happens when, after someone asks a question, the other person is looking, is accountable for answering, but is not showing any signals that the answer is coming. So it's this kind of holding still the whole body, not indicating, not frowning, not leaning, not just kind of frozen position. So I've been looking at this. This is not only, of course, after quite in this context, but I was focusing on these practices after a question has been asked, because then the other person is accountable, and also when there is not lack of attendance. So the person is looking and seeing the question, but not signal of response is coming. So I'll show you a couple of examples. Later. So now I will show you a couple of examples in these two sign languages. One just straightforward questions, successful question, fitted answers, no problems of understanding. So these are two friends and colleagues talking here. The person on the right goes, "Where are your parents living now?" So you can see. You can see her position. So she's leaning forward. So this is the sign. This is what the word for the sign for what. And eyebrow. So it's the whole body is involved in this request. So there you can see how the body posture is released after the answer is provided. So here's the video. "So where are your parents living now?" "My mom is here and my dad lives in Santa Fe." "Oh, there." So that's just a straightforward question. This is another one. When so the person on the right is asking how often Jesus was coming to the deaf class when we're younger. The person on the left is responding, "Yes, with my mom and father." "That's right." And she continue expanding on the question. And the person on the right keeps like information uptake by nodding. So here's the video. "So how often are you coming to the club?" Yeah, with my mom and dad, that's right. Yeah, quite often, till I was 16, and then we became more independent and started to come less and less to Sabiki. So now, what, how signers deal with problems in understanding. So now we'll show a couple of examples of repair practices in both sign languages again. Before that, just to remind you about the definition of repair practices that you might all know very well. So it is dealing with problems in speaking, hearing, understanding. And as you can imagine, doesn't work very well for sign language. So I adjusted the definition to dealing with problems in producing, perceiving, and understanding, which includes both sign and spoken languages. So here's one example. The person on the left is asking a question. The person on the right goes, initiates repair. Then you can again see all the different bodily features, including head forward, eyebrows together, a question sign, and all these elements are held until the person of the trouble source starts solving the problem or solves the problem. So that you see that the person is answering, providing a solution to the initiation of repair, and the person on the right, it's still with that position. And then you can see a change of position there when the person could finally provide the answer to the question. So here's one example in that's an Argentinian sign language. This is an example in BSL. These are two friends. The one on the right is talking about they are talking about work. She's talking about teaching and two groups that she has and how one of the groups have very strict deadlines and needs to. She needs to teach quite a lot so they can get their certificate. And so she's using finger spelling, she's using BSC, and the person on the left didn't know what that stands for, so she's initiates repair asking for that. And then she repeats and expands what that stands for, that is for Bachelor of Science. So there you can again see the initiation and repair, eyebrows, man on hand, head movement. So this is what, and then she's a BSC. Then she releases the hand, and after the in the middle of the response. So this is the video. So there's two different groups. I had to really teach a lot of the BSC so they can get their certificate. What's BSC? It's certificates for the first, second, and third year so they can get their diploma. Now, the last example. Well, this is one of the practices I was mentioning that I described as a freeze-loop response. So the evidence that this is a kind of repair-like practice is that it's treated as a explicit repair initiation. By the person of the trouble source, so by just repeating maybe the question or reiterating the question. Another piece of evidence is that this also, when the response is not satisfactory, maybe the person would upgrade to an explicit repair after this. So this is the example. So. Two friends signing. One is asking a question, and then again repeating, kind of rephrasing, repeating the question. So in these two frames, in the first one, the person on the right is the person who is performing this freeze look practice, and the person on the left is asking the question. So the first frame is when the person is asking the question, and the other person is, as you see, his body position is like it's not. Sometimes when even before the question ends, the other person just starts maybe moving their hands, raising their hands. But then you can see that the person is very comfortable, not considering responding yet. In the second frame, it's the end of the question. So there is a gap of a couple of seconds, and then you can compare both, and the person has the exactly the same body position. So now we'll show the video. Now we'll show it again in a slower motion. So after the initiation of repair, a solution is provided, then the person on the right is also initiating repair. What ceiling it's asking, so it's explicitly initiating repair. So that's the ghost question. How much the ceiling cost? Nothing. Did you pay then? Ceiling? What ceiling? For the garage? Yeah, I paid everything. Yeah, I paid. So that's the last question, the last example. So now I'd like to mention some two main preliminary findings related to turn, find, and haul, and freeze look response. This is a as I said at the beginning, this is a project in progress. So I'm still looking, collecting cases and coding examples, but especially to also get a more fine grain details on practices like this too. So there are interesting temporal alignments between the resolution of repair sequence and the retraction of the hull as a signal of understanding. Maintaining a hold indicates that there is an unresolved issue, that the solution is pending, and that repair is still ongoing. Breaking and hold, on the other hand, indicates that the problem has been partially or totally solved. In relation to freeze look response, these practices elicits the same type of response as explicit repair initiation, which prompts repetition of what has been said or elaboration when what has been signed as answer is not enough. So another evidence of this function, as I mentioned before, is when it fails, the addressee upgrades it to explicit repair, as we just seen in the last example. So now some concluding remarks concerning what's same similar in both sign languages and what is different. So what I've found so far is that both sign languages uses similar formal and functional resources to ask questions, to answer questions, initiating repair. They both uses turn, find, and hold. Also repetition, that it's something that I didn't present today. They both show cases of explicit and implicit initiation of repair. They both also have distinct types of fitted and not fitted responses. So some differences so far. are related to the frequency of these practices that are produced in both languages. So comparing the cases, Argentinian Sign Language has a much higher number of question instances compared to BSL. One of the hypotheses is that it could be for cultural differences. Another hypothesis is that maybe the differences in the corpora collection, that one corpus is more prearranged, only diadic, the other corpus. I only was using for the Argentinian corpus the diadic conversations, not the multi-party conversations, so to make them more equal comparison. But still, there are differences, so that could also be one of the reasons that the number are affecting the number of cases in both corpora. So the next research question is for me to know if these practices are exclusive to sign language. So this is an empirical question, but I think that the answer is no, that sign languages also might use these practices because speakers, of course, they'll also use gestures and visual attention when they're communicating in everyday interactions. So to finish this presentation, I'd just like to say that I think this is studying sign language interaction. Like this project is adding evidence that by looking at sign language, we can learn or understand better visual and gestural practices in spoken languages too. So I think the ideal situation would start comparing across modalities, including both sign and spoken languages. So for instance, in the case of question response sequences, there's one large cross-linguistic project only on sign languages, but they are based on very few cases and elicited data and only on questions, so there's nothing on interaction. And in the case of the spoken languages, there's this great project done by the NPR across 10 languages, spoken languages, but no, even though they're also considering eye gaze, for instance, and other non-verbal practices, not comparing both, including both modalities. So there are not really many cross-modal. So that's all I have for today. Thank you
very much. Good. Time for questions, observations, comments. Yes, Kevin.
It's very nice to see how your work is developing. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the term final hold. So are you seeing that associated with repair sequences?
Could you
tell us more about the term final hold? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's an interesting point. So I've been looking at term final hold for repair sequences for many years, as I was saying before. But now in this project, I'm also looking at, successful practices. So looking at questions, and also wanted to know if they also use this practice. And yeah, indeed they do.
So in a question answer sequence, which speaker is producing the hold?
The person asking the question. Also in the response practices, I'm also interested when the person is answering the question, often is also holding using to end hold till the other person gets an information uptake. So both when asking more, also when responding often, and when asking, of course, the more delayed is the response, the longer is the holding of the term.
Tom.
As a person who knows very little about sign languages, it seems to me that the I let's say I would expect that the variety in the means that you can use to do the kind of things that you're looking at are in principle smaller when signing than when speaking a vocal language. Is that true, or is that a complete mistaken view of me?
You mean in linguistic resources like question words?
I mean
you,
for example, to express a question, you can raise your eyebrows or you can frown. So in terms of eyebrow use, there's as I see it, there are two options. And so I could imagine that across sign languages, some sign languages take this option, the other take that option, but these options seem to be more limited because they are connected to the movements that the face can make, the movements that the hands can make. Is that so that these
I would say no. I don't think at all that is
the case.
On the opposite, I would say that my opinion are much more rich in terms of interaction and options they have. What you were mentioning, it's very common in across sign languages and also in spoken languages. But of course, they use it like for logical information on the face. It's quite complicated grammar used. So using nose movements, using mouth, using head, also palms up, one hand holding, also repetition. Sometimes if they repeat many times so the other person can a part of the question, for instance. Say that is they have less options, but it's quite rich in terms of options.
Yeah, but that I meant also for the kind of things that you're investigating now.
Yes.
You see the parallels between Argentinian sign languages and British sign
yes.
language. So I was wondering how surprising is that?
Well, we didn't know before, so yeah. So I was expecting that we use similar practice. That's what I was expecting for both. But well, I was saying before, frequency is different. There are all other small things and patterns that are different, of course. In formal terms, they use different, of course. Linguistic resources, so the sign for what is not the same in both languages. So in BSL is this, of course, with non-manual markers, and in Argentinian sign language is this, and in different languages, in Turkish sign language is like this, and so there is different in different sign languages. So what you were mentioning about eyebrows is comparable with, for example, when we talk about raising intonation and lower intonation for spoken languages. So it's in that sense. Also, studies on other sign languages, this is like a common characteristic, but actually in everyday conversation, it's not always in all type of questions, they use that, they use other resources. So we are investigating how questions are done and in relation to answers as well, to know when a question starts and ends in a continuum of signing that is not it's not so clear. So by looking at answers and the sequence, it's quite
Thank you. We just have one question, but Catherine, perhaps you'd come up and just do the handover. But Ruth Parry has a question.
Well, it was more a comment, really, that the first thing that came to mind when Tom asked his question is the facility in signing to hold a sign, whereas you know you can't hold a word. You know, you can add an instrument, you can repeat it, which you can do in sign language, but the thing that you know a verbal speaker cannot do is hold the sign itself. I mean, you could do the eyebrow thing, but you can't go what. So I think that's perhaps the most basic answer to that is that you know that they have different affordances for these things rather than just being a subset of what verbal speakers can do. There's also a different set of affordances.
Yeah, sometimes they also notice in the for spoken languages, it's not maybe holding the voice, but the maybe the gesture of the mouth, like ah,
yeah.
Maybe I just keep my mouth open.
Yeah,
I could be more well visual again.
Yeah,
practicing. So during the next year, I've been comparing more both modality with spoken languages.
Have fun.
Yeah. Thanks.
That was cool. Thank you.